always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Great to have you along. And here on Faith Radio, our goal is to help connect faith to life every day. And on this program particularly, I like to find ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life situations. And today we're going to talk about a life situation that all of us will need to face at some point and maybe have within family. And so we're going to get some good practical advice today with our guests in studio and invite you to join in the conversation as well. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, and Carissa's at the phone. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. We've got, we should mention Commit to Live Fit, getting started next week, right?
Yeah, with the 40-day challenge.
Yeah.
Where you can get fit physically and spiritually.
Yeah.
Good option.
Some of us, we'll lean more toward the other, maybe. Than
Yeah, it's not a pick-and-choose deal.
Oh,
I think it's a package
okay,
deal
oh,
here.
Sure.
Yeah.
I thought I'd like to say I'm in shape. Pears are shape, you know.
Yeah,
but
right.
Anyway, so. But you can sign up online. Susie Larson to Live the Promise will be leading that each afternoon. And it's a great way to really actually open into this, move into this Lenten season with a time of really growing in your faith and getting fit as well. So check it out, myfaithradio.com, and you can sign up today. It's right in the front page. Ted, today we're going to talk about something that all of us need to face sooner or later. It has to do with leaving a legacy and the financial estate and charitable gift planning. I don't know, Ted, have you, is this something that's been on your, maybe your New Year's goals and resolutions?
Seriously, yes. Actually, yeah. We just recently had a meeting with our financial planner, and we need to do some tweaking on that and some new crafting of some documents. So high on the list.
And the reason that we're going to find out why we need to have some of those documents today, I want to welcome back to the studio Kirby Stahl. Kirby is Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern, and he's the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation. And along with Kirby, Paul Stein is back. Paul is a certified financial planner with more than 25 years' experience, and he's the founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources. And Advanced Retirement Resources exists to help individuals identify and work toward their ultimate financial goals through personalized financial planning and wealth management. And these guys have a lot of expertise. In fact, they have done seminars and conferences and just individual conversations with dozens and hundreds of people over the years, and we're honored to have them back with us. Paul and Kirby, welcome back.
Thank you, Neil. Happy to be here.
Glad to be here, Neil.
Let's start right up front, because we want to talk about financial planning, estate planning, all those things, leaving a legacy. But maybe the first question is why? Why do we need to have a plan?
I always think it's very good to remember the principles by which we as followers of Christ abide. And that is that we are good stewards. God has given us everything, and it's my role to be a steward of those resources. And why should that stop with my physical well-being, my family? It should extend to my financial resources, to my job, to my assets, to my estate, and to the legacy.
Yeah, I think that's the key word is stewardship. I also think of purposeful, of being intentional. We're called to live intentionally, kingdom-minded, and wouldn't you want to have that same intentionality with what you leave behind, and then the people that influences and has an impact on?
I guess we should say right up front. I mean, if you don't have some sort of plan, the government makes one for you, in essence, right?
I think that's true. For the state of Minnesota, if we don't have a will in place, there are things that the state would abide by and direct for your estate. And so I think it's important that each of us take it upon ourselves to make those plans and not leave them up to somebody else.
And the word legacy, in fact, Kirby, just maybe let's talk about right up front, because the foundation has a new website which has the word legacy in it. Talk a little about legacy, because that's a pretty key word.
Sure. So a couple weeks ago we launched unwlegacy.org, and it's a website that's filled with resources, very practical resources for estate and charitable gift planning, but it also tells the stories of many people who, for the university, have left their legacy and the story behind it. And again, each of us has a story, each of us has a legacy to leave, and in some respects, people would think about their values and ideals, but when it comes down to charitable gift planning, people have assets that sometimes they impart to charity.
You can find out more at unwlegacy.org. By the way, if you have some questions, I want to open up the phone lines right away. Questions about financial estate planning, charitable giving, leaving a legacy, you know, all those questions related to wills and maybe executors and, you know, children and trusts and all those kinds of things. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient and you want to just drop us a note, an email, you can do that by going to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. And you can send us your question. It comes right into the studio. So it's a way for us to get your questions asked, because I think all of us probably do have questions. I'm wondering, guys, is there often a triggering event that causes us to begin thinking about estate planning? I mean, Paul, you've been, you know, doing retirement planning for, 25 years.
Yeah, oftentimes it's when a loved one or a family friend or someone passes away, then we're reminded. Or if there's like a near-death accident, if somebody's, a close call in the car, or usually it's event-driven. Somebody gets a cancer diagnosis, you know, something where we're reminded of the frailty of our human condition, and, death does come upon all of us. So,
but we probably want to planning ahead, actually, is always a good idea, right? If we have time, that's going to make that plan probably more solid generally, isn't it?
I think that's very true. In fact, I was just teaching Sunday school to my own Sunday school class at church, and I posed the topic, well, what good does a will do for a young person? And for those of us who are on the other end of the spectrum, who have children, who are minors, there's always good estate planning tools available, no matter what the age. But as Paul said, it's typically an event that drives it, a birth, death, an illness, a trip to a sunny, warm location. Those are always reasons to say, what can I do to get my life in order, just in case?
So what type of estate planning should we do now, and maybe how often should that be reviewed?
Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking when Kirby was talking here that oftentimes the estate planning is the last part of someone's financial planning that they do. Usually when I sit down with somebody and we're reviewing all the pieces that they've been doing over the years, now all those pieces fit together, you know, and there's tax issues and investment issues and, you know, insurance issues and legal issues. But a lot of times it's the estate plan. More often than not, the estate planning is the part that someone hasn't attended to. And I think just because it has to do with death and dying and harder issues, you know, it's those. A lot of times, it's just the last piece that people you take care of. Doing something is better than nothing. You know, and a lot of times people have done some planning in the past, but maybe it's been years that have gone by, and some of those documents have things have changed. Maybe their family situation hasn't changed, but people they named in the documents would be different. And so if it's been, you know, more than 3 to 5 years, probably a good idea, just because our memories fade too. You can't remember what your documents say, is pull them out, look through them yourself, and then get some help reviewing them if needed.
And, you know, maybe just, you know, to review the very simple definition, I mean, we're not talking about tax and investment and insurance. Estate is, when we talk about estate plan, we mean what?
Well, we typically talk about the will, or in some cases, a trust that gets created. And a lot of times people immediately then think about, well, I need to find an attorney, a reputable person who I could meet with. And this typically costs money. And sometimes people aren't sure how much it's going to cost, how much time it's going to take. And then when you start to go down that rabbit trail, you just start to avoid the topic altogether. And I think just like having a financial advisor is good for me to help my assets grow, my financial assets, well, so would an attorney be good for me to help draft one of those most important documents about leaving my legacy, about leaving my assets after my death.
But in addition to that, there's parts of your estate plan that are really important that sometimes people overlook that don't even involve the attorney, and that's just simply your beneficiary designations. You know, if you like for younger people, a lot of times the largest assets in their estate a lot of times are maybe their retirement plans and life insurance, and having those beneficiary designations, you know, because if you pass something to a named individual on a beneficiary designation, it doesn't even your will has nothing to do with those assets. So sometimes people will or will not have had the will taken care of, but they've overlooked how the beneficiaries go along with that, and if it's working with the will and the other documents, or if those need to be changed.
So in a retirement plan or an insurance plan, and there's always a beneficiary designation, right? And so that should match what the will says, right? So those should coincide. Because is there one that takes a sort of precedence over the other?
The beneficiary designation would always take precedence over the will. And again, bypassing the probate process, the state of Minnesota, I think, has made it pretty simple for nearly every asset you have to pass outside of the probate process now. And that would save time, it would save money, it would allow your finances to go directly to who you intend to leave, whether it's charity or individuals.
So it might be helpful to explain what probate is. You know, probate is just that the legal process to determine who should get something, an asset, when somebody passes away. So it's just to make sure that the right people get it, and it's orderly, and somebody oversees that, so the right people get the assets. So, like Kirby mentioned, if somebody's named as a beneficiary, then that's pretty clear who gets it. So if it's my wife or my kids, so then that it doesn't have to go through probate because there's a named beneficiary. With jointly held property, if it's joint with right of survivorship, and they're, you know, I pass away, then if there's a surviving joint owner, that is pretty clear. It's the surviving joint owner that gets that asset. Or if you put assets into a trust, then there's no probate necessary. But if there's other things that there's no joint owner surviving, there's no beneficiary named, it's not in a trust, then who should get it? And that's what probate's for. And your will is just simply your letter of instruction to the probate court, telling the probate court who you want to get those things. So if things don't pass through probate, your will has nothing to do with those non-probate assets.
And naming a beneficiary, you could name your trust, for example, as a beneficiary, right? It doesn't have to be in a family member or anything. I mean, it has to be specific, I guess, right? It can't just be my spouse and children or those kind of things. Or is it
typically not? There's a primary beneficiary, and in my case, that would be my spouse. And then the secondary beneficiary on most of my plans that have a beneficiary designation is my estate. And so then if my spouse is no longer there, then it all goes into this big bucket called the estate. Again, the will, through the probate process, would have to figure out what to do with that.
So. But a common mistake that people make, or that causes some issues or some problems, is people with minor children. So let's say Kirby still has kids under the age of 18. So he names his wife as the primary beneficiary and his kids as the contingent beneficiary. If that's the way it's set up, which is very common, if something happened to Kirby, minors can't legally own property or own assets. So then that creates the need for a conservatorship, which is maybe beyond the scope of of this. So that's where you could name, like you mentioned, naming a trust, where you might name the minor trust provisions, the trust created in your will that you put into your will for your minor children. You would name that trust as the beneficiary. So then it flows into that trust that's not even going to be created until you die, because your will is what's creating it. But you name the trust, and then that would take care of it for your minor children. So that would be a way to do that and avoid some of the problems that are pretty common with beneficiaries.
We're talking about some common mistakes and maybe some wise advice on what we can do in terms of leaving a legacy. As we talk financial, estate, and charitable gift planning today with Paul Stein and Kirby Stahl, invite you to join the conversation, too. Maybe you have a question, or you perhaps have been through the process recently, and you know that it can sometimes be a little complicated. We'd love to interact with you. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Maybe you're wondering, you know, where can you go to get advice and wise advice? That's always, I think, one of the challenges. We'll get Kirby and Paul's recommendations on those as well. Or if you'd rather drop us a note, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page for the email link. Kirby Stahl is the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation, Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern. Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner and Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And we'll continue with Paul and Kirby in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. All going at some point, right? Wasn't that the old line from who was it? The accountant of Rockefeller's asked, you know, how much did old John D. leave? And the answer was all of it.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, that's the reality. It's all getting passed on someplace. So how do we be good stewards of that? We're talking about leaving a legacy, about financial, estate, and charitable gift planning. And Kirby Stahl, who is the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation and Senior Director for Advancement Services here at the University of Northwestern, is with us in studio, as well as Paul Stein, a Certified Financial Planner and Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. He's been in this field for 25-plus years, offering some great insight. And we've had Paul and Kirby on with us in the past, and love to have you join the conversation as well. If you have a question or a comment as it relates to estate planning and more, it's 877-933-2484. And guys, are we talking estate planning primarily because this is a tax savings, to do this to save taxes, or is there really more to it than that?
I think it's a both and, Neil. You know, we look at the will and estate planning on how to preserve the values that we want to instill to those who are going to receive these assets, but there is a real legitimate reason to do this, to save taxes that might be incurred otherwise. The federal government certainly gives a lot of leeway. In fact, it's over $5 million per person, so $10 million per couple, if they were to die in 2015, that they could pass estate tax-free. But there are people who would be concerned about that.
Well, and then even with people that have been blessed and have larger estates, I mean, just... There's so many planning considerations to think about. If you, like, if someone passes, if you're paying estate taxes at your death, you're paying those taxes with dollars that are subject to the tax. So you, where if you gift money during your lifetime, you end up paying gift taxes. Those amounts that you gifted are excluded from the tax. So if someone has $15, $20, $30 million estate, There's some effective planning that can be done while they're living that would save literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. I was just looking at analysis this week of $700,000 just by doing some gifting while they're alive rather than waiting to have it all done at death. So there's the situations are different if you have a lot or a little. It's still important to do, though.
It does bring up the question, Kirby, you talked about passing along values. I mean, I think, what does that encompass, and how do these documents and instruments help us really communicate values when we're gone?
Well, I think in addition to all the questions about should I have an estate plan and what type of estate plan, some of the questions that come up are, and how much should I leave to my children? And should I leave money to charity? And these are all great questions, and they're very individualized because each family can have children with many different backgrounds. And so if your goal is to leave money to your children, what would that mean if you left it equally to children, or if you gave more to one child than another? If you have a child with special needs that needs actually more money from your estate than another child would be. So it's very sensitive discussions that take place. Again, many people don't even have these conversations with their children, and so they're just left wondering, I think.
And go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I was just thinking of the easy way to do it is just do everything the same. But I think if for those of us that have raised more than one child, you realize that the wisest parenting oftentimes is not the same. You know, you might have the same values, the same principles, but how you implement discipline, how you parent is very dependent on the child. And I think, you know, the wisest way to plan your estate is to think about unique differences as well. Like Kirby mentioned, a child that has maybe special needs, or, you know, you maybe have two children and one goes into a lucrative career and is financially independent, and your other child goes into ministry or missions and has to raise support every year. You know, do you want to have those two children handled equally in your estate planning? You know, and maybe that's what someone wants to do, but I think there's wisdom in looking at what should you do differently to be a good steward.
So, Kirby, as you said, that, you know, many don't even talk about this with their kids. Is this something that you have a conversation with your children as they get to be young adults? And maybe, you know, from your experience, what does that look like?
From my experience, I had to bring it up to my parents that this should be something they should be considering: an estate plan, a will, healthcare directives, powers of attorney. And up to that point, they really hadn't thought of it. They were in the camp of maybe, well, somebody would take care of that for me. It's not really that necessary, is it? But when I brought it up, then it again brings up all these other conversations about, well, what about the family dynamics? And what about the heirloom things that you might want to bequeath a child? And so, I think it would be a great table conversation. I see it happening around the holidays when everybody's together. We sit down and we start talking about the things that are really meaningful to us, and it's our values and ideals.
I think there's different levels of disclosure that you might want to have based on the family situation and the age and the amounts involved. You know, but you can still have those discussions about your, you know, what's important, what you're valuing, without maybe disclosing amounts. You know, we have clients that might be quite wealthy, and they don't want their kids to know how much the family has because they feel like it wouldn't be healthy for them to know. You know, it might cause them to be less motivated to, you know, to work less. You know, if they know that the family has a lot of wealth. So I think that's where people need to use wisdom and discretion in how much to disclose. You know, you can still have the conversations. You can still talk about what's important. You know, charities that you support that you want to give to, and without discussing amounts, why you give. You know,
we'll dive into that here in a moment as well, and talk a little bit about, you know, do we pass it all on to the kids and ask that they, you know, give to charity, or do we do some upfront and build that in? I want to talk a little bit about, you know, even just maybe planning for retirement savings, some of those things as well. We're talking about a financial estate, charitable gift planning, and maybe more importantly, leaving a legacy. It all comes together. There's a website we want to alert you to. It's unwlegacy.org. That's the new website from the Northwestern Foundation. Kirby Stahl is Senior Director for Advancement Services at the University of Northwestern, President of the Northwestern Foundation, and Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner and Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And they're in studio today to take your questions. We'll get to some of those here in just a moment. Invite you to call with yours at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or again, if you want to go online, it's myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page to leave us an email, and we'll get to your questions on the other side of this quick break. Legacy. What does that look like in some very practical terms? We're talking about it today as we deal with estate planning and financial planning and charitable gift planning. It's all part of our conversation today. We're glad to welcome back to the studios Kirby Stahl, Senior Director for Advancement Services here at the University of Northwestern in St. Paul, and he's Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation. The foundation has been established since 1996 as a community foundation, works to facilitate the transfer of planned gifts that benefit Northwestern University and media, as well as other charities. And Paul Stein is a certified financial planner, more than 25 years of experience. He's founder and president of Advanced Retirement Resources, and their goal is to work, provide personalized financial planning and wealth management, and has expertise in guiding clients and preparing for transition and navigate their retirement years. Both Paul and Kirby have been guests with us in the past, and we're happy to have them back in studio. And we're fielding your questions at 877-933-2484. And we're going to start out with Ben calling in, listening in Faith 90.7 here in the Twin Cities or AM 900. Ben, go ahead. You're on with Kirby and Paul.
Great. Just got a quick question. I have a father and stepmother who are reluctant to do any kind of estate planning or create a will. And I've talked to them several times, and it just kind of keeps going round and round. My question is, if they pass away, so I guess specifically if my father passed away, then my stepmother passed away, would the money just kind of go into a black hole and be consumed by the state of Minnesota, or do I have some kind of legal claim on it? My concern is, since they're not dictating where they want the money to go, I don't want the government to grab it.
And Ben, do you have family yourself?
Yeah, I'm married with a son.
Okay, all right. Yeah, Kirby, Paul, what do you think?
Well, with blended families, things get more complicated. But if you if they don't have a will, what's going to happen if your dad passes away first? Then joint property is going to go to whoever the joint survivor is, whoever the beneficiaries are named. And if they don't have a will, then the estate, the state of Minnesota is going to, intestate laws are going to dictate who gets what. And, so you can't make somebody do something, but, it won't fall into a black hole. I mean, that's why, that's why probate is there, you know, so, if there's assets where there's a beneficiary, a joint owner, you know, then that's going to get to the joint owner, the named beneficiary. So it might be your stepmom. But then at her death, then it's going to, same thing. If she has no will, then it's who's named as the beneficiaries. If there's no joint owners, then the intestate laws are going to dictate if it goes to her children. So it won't go into a black hole. The government's not going to take it. That's why probate is there to make sure that the right people get it. But in a blended family, oftentimes, what the people would want to have happen oftentimes doesn't happen because the state didn't know what you wanted. So I guess, but it's a tough thing when it's your parent or your stepmom and you're trying to encourage them to do the right thing, but they don't want to do it. It's kind of like, you're not doing it because you're selfish. You just want them to get it. You want whatever they want to happen. And that's a hard one, by just to prod them along, help them get advice from somebody to help them see the importance of getting something done, at least knowing what would happen if they didn't do anything. And then that might be what motivates them to do something different is if they see where it actually goes, where it would go if with no plan, and then they realize that they need to do something to have a different result.
The other thing I was thinking about, too, is typically we would recommend that your dad or your stepmom would have somebody in mind to take care of the matters at their death. And a lot of times maybe that's disclosing what the ownership of certain properties is. That might give you some assurance, too, to know if it's going to go to the right place, the right person.
So an executor, is that what?
It would be an executor, or sometimes it is a child, where they'll say, well, these are the assets that are going to go to you, and these will go to other people or other places.
And just a plug for Kirby's office, I guess some listeners that maybe don't know Kirby and the people that work with you, you know, that if you contact them, it's not like they're going to try to get you to give all your money away. You know, they have great resources. They deal with estate plans, and then they can many times put someone in touch with the right professionals that they might need, you know, whether it's an attorney or a financial planner or somebody that's needed to actually implement the plans. But they have a great resource, and they have a lot of resources.
And it's a free service, right?
It is. So, yeah, we really want people to be educated and make good decisions. And ultimately, if that would yield a gift to Northwestern, that's wonderful, but that's not the main point. We really want people to be good stewards of their resources, and especially engaging family members, because family sometimes can be a very sensitive topic on these matters.
Yeah. So if you need someone to talk to, Ben or others listening there, check out the website, unwlegacy.org. But again, free service, and it's not a pressure kind of thing. It's an opportunity to get some good questions answered. Let's go to line three. Eric is calling in from Bemidji. Eric has a question for Kirby and Paul. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. Leaving me on hold too long always makes me want to ask about 30 more questions.
Right. Focus, but, Eric. Focus. Actually, you can do it.
All right. I'll focus. Here we go. But seriously, in response to that last caller, I was just thinking, sometimes people are afraid of paying lawyers, but especially if you have a larger estate, if you don't get a lawyer, you ought to see how expensive it is if you die intestate and don't have a lawyer. So it can be a lot of zeros behind what you end up paying in taxes. So, just an encouragement, get a lawyer. But that does bring me to my question, and that is, what in the state of Minnesota constitutes a last will and testament? And the reason I ask this is because a number of years ago, before one of my elder relatives died, we actually wrote stuff down that we wanted, and she signed the papers and in our writing even that we wanted, and apparently that was acceptable. But is that still true? Can you write your own document, sign it, and that's a valid will and testament, or do you have to have it notarized? Do you have to have a lawyer sign it? What's the story on it these days?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, the state of Minnesota will recognize a will that's created, whether it's with a legal professional or yourself. It should be witnessed by two individuals, as far as I know, and the state of Minnesota will not recognize a handwritten will. So if you simply take a pen and a piece of paper and scrawl it out, that won't be recognized. But to the best of my knowledge, a typed will that explains everything, whether it's in all the paragraphs that are necessary, should be effective. I think some of the challenge lies in who's going to see that? Who's going to find it at the person's death? Is there another one out there that somebody else had that they didn't know of? And so there should be some communication on the fact that I created this, I typed it, it's witnessed. I don't believe it needs to be recorded in any lawyer's file somewhere, but just that it is typed, signed, witnessed. And it needs to be done, I think, with that thought that the person was of sound mind and that they were not unduly influenced during the time of their creation.
And would you say that those guidelines are similar in Wisconsin or Iowa or the Dakotas? Well, do you have any idea?
Well, I'm not an authority on the other states' matters, so I'm going to withhold. But, I think it's really good to at least get the advice of some legal counsel, even if you're going to write this thing on your own.
And it did bring up the question, so who finds it? Is this something that we should file should it be filed at an attorney's office or a financial planner? Or what do you recommend of that? Just in a lockbox at home?
Some attorneys will hold a copy of the executed document. A lot of times for wills, they won't. For trusts, they do, just because they have so many. So I think it's practical. A decision, but the main thing is to have to store it in a safe place, and then to make sure that the people, the right people, know that it exists and they know where it is. That's the big thing, is make sure somebody knows that you have drafted the will and it's executed and where it's located.
And typically, there's one of the first paragraphs would say who you nominate to take care of the settling of your estate. And I think that person is extremely important to find the right person, but then to let them know where this information is if you don't give them a copy of it. So.
Which brings up Lois's question. She says, every time I want to talk to my kids about my will, they don't want to. Any advice on how I can approach them with this? I don't know how old her kids are, but that you probably run into that a time or two, Kirby.
That's a great question, because sometimes I think how many parents talk to their children about their estates. I would love to know from my parents' perspective, but if that's the case, maybe it's a matter of fact of letting them know what you would like to leave them. whether it's imparting, again, your values and ideals, or maybe there are some heirloom items that you want to leave them. And if it's financial assets, I think that might perk up their ears a little bit too.
And if they're not ready to talk about it necessarily now, I mean, that's where you can maybe write things down. You know, the attorney will help you draft the legal documents, and it's all in legal writing, and sometimes that's hard for people to understand, you know, what it's actually saying. And a lot of times it takes a lot of words to say just what you could say in one sentence. But you can, people can write a letter to the kids. They can write, you know, why they've done the planning they have, certainly with charitable gifts, or if you've treated children differently because of their situation, you know, to communicate why you did that. And if either because of preference, you don't want them to know yet, or they don't want to talk about it yet, to write those things down and just put it with your will, put it with your estate planning documents. But I think a lot of times if people communicate their heart, why parents did what they did, that can be real helpful, because sometimes kids maybe will depend on the relationship, maybe assume the worst if they didn't get very much and a sibling got more. You know, did they do something wrong? Did mom and dad love me less? You know, so I think communicating why you've done what you've done can be really helpful to children and other beneficiaries.
And that brings up another question, too, that we received. By the way, if you have a question or comment, you can call us at 877-933-2484. Anonymous caller asks, can you discuss a bit about how to consider disabled children into our will? And is there some advice on finding a good lawyer to get that set up?
Well, I know that there are attorneys who specialize in various types of estate planning. It is not a one-size-fits-all. And I have seen within wills that a trust would be created to take care of, whether it's a person with special needs or minor children. Paul, you mentioned that before. And so I know that there are documents out there that can be established that at your death, then your assets would go into or pour into that trust to fund it for whether it's a term of years or the life of that person, and even spell out the specific types of care you want that child to receive, whether you want it to be the highest level or moderate, or where you want them to be cared for. So you can really spell out those things.
Well, and another reason why to have a trust that meets certain criteria, or called a special needs trust, is let's say you have a disabled child and they're eligible for certain benefits. If they receive too much money, then that might disqualify them from receiving those benefits. If it's Social Security disability benefits or benefits through the state, it might disqualify them from receiving those benefits that would be very helpful for them to continue getting. So by having the trust drafted in a way so it doesn't disqualify them from those benefits can be really, really important.
And probably say a word, too, about as we think about children. If you have young children in the home, say, well, if my wife and I would be off the scene, who's going to raise my children? That's a pretty important part of this planning, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, too. And the will provides language in there to make a guardian appointment for your minor children. And, again, that's something you should have in a document like this, not just a casual conversation with your sibling or your parent saying you're going to take the kids, right? Because those kinds of conversations don't really hold up in the court when it comes time to appoint them if you're not around.
And sometimes those are difficult as people are, you know, if they have young children and they're looking down the road, you know, because, you know, who would be the best to name, and that can be a really difficult situation. My encouragement to clients is to think now, you know, think in the current, you know, who would be the best person now, looking at family dynamics, your children, who would be the best people that you would want to be guardians of your children now, because then it's easy to update those documents, you know, in 5 years, in 10 years, if the kids are in a different place, if other families are in a different place, you can always change and update those documents.
And it's another reason to update and check them out regularly, every couple of years anyway, right?
Correct.
As things change. All right, we're going to talk some more with Paul Stein and Kirby Stahl. Kirby is the Vice President of the Northwestern Foundation, Senior Director for Advancement Services here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Paul Stein, Certified Financial Planner, Founder and President of Advanced Retirement Resources. And we'll give Paul's email address as well if you'd like to contact him, and you can find out more about the great work that the foundation does at Northwestern on their new website at unwlegacy.org. And it's free service, and it's not about manipulating. It's just offering great advice on how you can be a good steward. So check it out, unwlegacy.org. More with Paul and Kirby in just a moment. If you have a question, there's still room for you at 877-933-2484.
Build your kingdom here. Let the darkness fear. Show your mighty hand. Kill our streets and lands.
Well, we're 11 minutes before the top of the hour here, and talking today about leaving a legacy, about financial estate and charitable gift planning. And I was just thinking, as that bumper was playing, about building, you know, God's kingdom here, read some years ago of wonderful book called The Eternity Portfolio, and it reminded us that, you know, we spend a lot of time working on our earthly portfolio, but we should spend equal, if not more, time on that eternity portfolio. And about, and that's really part of what we're talking about today, is what does that legacy look like? Paul Stein from Advanced Retirement Resources and Kirby Stahl from the Northwestern Foundation are in the studio with us. And that is, I guess, the question that I want to get your perspective on when it comes to maybe charitable giving or you know, we've been maybe members of a church for years. When it comes to that estate plan, do we designate those things in specifically, or do we disperse to kids and say, well, here's some ministries that I really like and I'd like you to, I mean, is there a tax advantage or any benefit one way or the other?
Well, Neil, before I answer that, I just wanted to point out that, you know, in Matthew 25, there's the parable of the talents and how the farmer gave each person talents based on what they could manage. And I think there are people out there, again, like Paul, you mentioned, have sizable estates that exceed $10 million. There are some people who have might not think they have enough to live for the rest of their lives. And so it varies as far as how many resources we will have over our lifetime. What do you do with those at death? And my parents have chosen to say, well, we're going to leave you children equally in the will. And if you decide to give that to charity, that's your business, because people's mindsets change in that respect as well. I do have many conversations with people who want to leave their church or special charities, some or maybe a lot of their estate assets. And when it comes time to have those discussions, yes, there are tools out there that can provide income back to you while you're still living, that provides certain charitable tax deductions if you give now or if you give when you die through your estate. And so those are all conversations that we'd love to have with people.
In fact, in some ways, there may be, you know, benefits by doing something now, right? If we have a ministry or something that we care about, we can do some of those instruments now and actually make a big difference in taxes.
Absolutely. There are tools out there like the charitable gift annuity, the charitable trust. Again, one question that I get asked is, well, do I have an estate large enough to make room for these types of charitable gift plans? And again, that's where we partner with financial advisors and legal counsel to make sure that people have everyone in the picture and not just the charity who is going to be receiving these funds.
Yeah, charitable giving, you know, goes from, you know, a minimum of maybe doing a tithe, you know, to giving it all away. So where's that balance of generosity, you know, and part of that is God leads people in different ways. I think understanding that it's all God's and ultimately I'm going to leave it all behind. There is that saying, you know, doing your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going, you know, and so there is some joy in doing giving while you're living, you know, to whether it's charities, whether it's helping the kids. But I mean, there's just great joy in giving it to meaningful causes and seeing, certainly if it's, you know, kingdom building and you can help those ministries now. Why wait 20 years, to help if you can do it now? So then there's that balance of how much do I need, and how much can I give?
You know, when it comes to giving to kids, I mean, is it better to, if we're giving to kids now, maybe young adult children, do we just give with the understanding that that's sort of part of the estate now, in essence?
You know, depending on the age of your children, that will could be a very important instrument to say, you know, at at my death, if my children are this age, I might only want to leave them this much money and stagger it out over years. Because again, you might have children who are spendthrifts. You might have children who are good stewards. And I would not want to make this become either an entitlement or a burden to my children just because I didn't plan appropriately and left it all to them right now.
But right. Going back to your question about maybe you've treated the kids unequally, like maybe you have older children that you've already maybe given them, $80,000 or whatever towards their college, and you have younger children that haven't gotten that yet, or you maybe helped them with a house. So it's real easy to adjust that in your estate plan, have some document or an amendment that's referred to where you're adjusting it for lifetime gifts, and that really is dependent. But it's very easy to incorporate that into your estate plan.
Probably good for parents to kind of keep track of that too then, right?
Well, one benefit of making gifts while you're living to your kids is that way, if you can see how they handle small gifts, small is relative, but if you give them 10 or 20 or 30,000 now, you can maybe get some indication of what kind of stewardship they're going to give to maybe hundreds of thousands later. And so it's a good way to, and then also if they make some poor choices, they're making poor choices with a small amount rather than the big amount. So there's a lot of benefits to making gifts to your kids in some manner so you can see how they handle it and helping them.
We had a question from a couple of weeks ago. I had a program talking about the good funeral, about the funeral planning. And in that conversation, Jane had called in and said, my husband and I have two sons. One is responsible and one is not. How do we balance this out while working out our will?
I just think that's a great situation where you're going to have to use a lot of wisdom and discernment on the relationship you have with your children. And I just think that provides even more incentive and reason for you to love your children, no matter what age they are. And just because I'm an adult and have my own family, my parents still have a relationship with me, and they're guiding me along the way. And who knows? But the child who is irresponsible really could use, your values and these assets, and in the process, change how they live too.
And recognizing that we're all wired differently, some people, adults are very artistic, they're expressive and they're not very good with money. Others are more analytical and they maybe aren't, we're all wired differently. So I guess the thing for listeners to know is in a situation like that where you have, where you lack some confidence in one or more of the children, that's where a trust can be a very effective tool to take care of to manage those assets for the benefit of the child. That's just not young children. That can be children in their 40s, 50s, where their inheritance can benefit them and then not mess them up.
Is there a certain age recommendation to start estate planning or create a will?
I would say today.
Okay.
Anytime, really.
Yeah, and there are documents, we've talked about the will here, but then, there are estate planning documents for someone as soon as they're 18, to have a health care directive. Terry Schiavo is a young lady in Florida that a lot of people were aware of where the husband wanted one thing. She had a stroke. The parents wanted something else, and that's why it became national news. And if she had a health care directive, that we probably wouldn't know who she was. So a health care directive, because it's kind of surprising to parents sometimes that they can't speak for their child once they turn 18. The doctors will consider that, but a healthcare directive and a power of attorney. So really there are some estate planning. Estate planning is more than the will, and really anybody that's an adult should do some basic things.
Well, we're about out of time. Want to give opportunity again to Paul. If people want to find out more about maybe contacting you or Advanced Retirement Resources, they can just go to advancedretirement.com, right?
Correct.
A place to connect with Paul Stein, who's the president and founder, financial advisor at Advanced Retirement Resources. Kirby, the North Ocean Foundation is a resource available to help people at whatever stage they might be in. Right?
Absolutely.
And again, the new website just out, unwlegacy.org, and you find all sorts of, more information than you could get through reading in a couple of days, right?
That's true. A lot of information out there.
All right, so check that out, unwlegacy.org. just as a place to get some good starting help. And thank you for your questions today. And if there's some more questions that came up, we'll have Paul and Kirby back on again sooner than later, and so we can follow up on that. Or if you want to just contact them directly through the website, you can do that as well. We always like hearing from you. Your comments welcome at myfaithradio.com, and go to the Connecting Faith show page. And if you missed part of the show today or want to pass it on to a friend, you can always check out the podcast we posted after the broadcast. Paul and Kirby, good to have you guys on again. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Neil.
Good insight as always here on Connecting Faith. Glad to have you listening in. Again, it's myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page for the archives.